This is the Once Upon a Niger podcast.
Once Upon a Niger.
Hey, so we are back in this episode and we're still continuing in the theme of Nigerian independence. Last episode, we spoke about what is Nigeria, Nigeria's identity, and from if you listened to the last episode, you know how complex a discussion that is, and we attempted to, well, we didn't attempt to answer, but we gave some of our musings and thoughts on how we could go about building the myth of Nigeria.
Exactly. And so on this episode, we are going to look into the future.
Yes.
We haven't got a crystal ball, but we are going to try our best to project into the future of what Nigeria's history would look like. How do we get what we desire? How do we get there? What the journey looks like? What is the master plan? How can we all contribute to this future that we desire? So by we, I mean Nigerians in Nigeria and also Nigerians in the diaspora. So
a question I have. So it is the year, 2100.
Hmm? When is that? How many years from now is that?
Actually, that's not even that too far. It's like 80 years. Okay. 2100, yeah.
2100.
Yeah, 2100. Yeah. Maybe we should go further into
the future. Are you one of those people that say 20...
Well, what else would we say? Because you would say like 19...
Oh, you say 2012 or 20... So, when 2021?
We're doing maths now. Yes,
2021. You don't say, 2021.
No, I was trying to do something, Lara.
Sorry, I spoiled. Okay, so we're in year 20.
No, don't worry about that.
We're in year 2100. I now know what year we're in. What day are we in, anyway?
Okay, so we are about 100 years into the future. Let's go with that, right? Mm-hmm. What does Nigeria look like?
Wow. What does Nigeria look like? The most populous country in the world? Apparently, it's going to be the most populous country in the world. It's going to have more population than China.
Yeah, that's true.
Apparently, it's a projection. In the Nigeria of my dreams, even though I will be long gone to be with my heavenly father in 100 years time. But the Nigeria that I would love my generation, my children, grandchildren, great grandchildren, to have, to live in, it would just be, I guess, just like basic things, really, not really asking for much, but just a Nigeria that works, a Nigeria with the right amenities, a Nigeria where, do you know, a Nigeria where my people don't have to migrate because of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
They're migrating out of choice, out of like, just like, I just want to.
Mm.
Not because, oh, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for that, I'm going to leave my entire family back here and then I'm going to just... I think for me, migration has been such a... If I had to pick one thing that has affected Nigeria and is affecting Nigeria so much on a personal level and on an economic level, I think it's migration. The way it's affected the right to family life.
Mm.
The way it's affected... just how institutions in Nigeria are working. So we talk of the brain drain that we're experiencing in different facets of Nigeria. So for me, that Nigeria where foreigners are coming to live in Nigeria as opposed to, I mean, they are coming to live in Nigeria now, but more of the way you have migration where I can go to Australia, go to Canada, you know, it's a desirable place for me to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would love Nigeria to be a desirable destination for people to want to go and live in.
So that's your dream, Nigeria is a desirable destination.
Yeah, and of course for it to be desirable, it means that a lot of fundamental basic things are already on ground, it comes with it. People don't want to migrate to places where they're not gonna have good health, they're not gonna have good education, they're not gonna have good roads, there's insecurity and all of these things. So yeah, a desirable destination for migration.
That's, yeah. Yeah, that's nice actually.
Yeah.
Like that. That's hopeful. That's what I was trying to get to.
Rugged optimism.
Yes. That's a beautiful thing to desire. And I think that it's possible. It is possible. You know, I mean, you know, how many people dreamed of a free Nigeria before Nigeria gained independence? And many thought it's not possible. I'm sure there were even some Nigerians that didn't want it, you know. So a Nigeria that is desirable is possible. It is possible. I think for me, in 100 years time, what do I want Nigeria to be? What does it look like? I think, you know, it's these things are actually not very unique, but it's a place of peace. You know, joy. I actually think Nigeria is actually already, despite its adversity, is quite joyous. I think Nigerians are a joyous people.
We are Owambe people. We love to party.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think that's something that we already are. So I see that in our future.
More parties.
Yeah. You know, and parties for, you know, that are just about the celebration of life. I mean, we do that anyway. But it's maybe less in spite of the pain, and because, you know, we just are. I think we have a peace. I think peace and it being a place of rest. What does that look like? I don't know. I guess it's more a feeling. How do I want to feel in Nigeria in 100? Well, I won't be here in 100 years time, but how do I want to feel? How do I want my children or grandchildren to feel?
Yeah, no, that's a good one, because I guess emotions, especially in this time and in this day and age where mental health is it's now gaining prominence as a part of our general health that we need to pay attention to. And I think oftentimes, you know, the mental health state of Nigerians in Nigeria is not really something that people pay a lot of attention to, because we are outwardly this kind of like joyous and, you know, party, and we mask a lot of things with smiles, and, you know, they say we're the happiest people in the world, but are we really? So I guess what I hear you say is we're truly, like, there's true joy and true peace, and it must kind of sound like those things are reserved for another world, because I don't want to get whatever, but there is a sense of peace that you can have, you know, living in your country. There's a sense of joy and sense of happiness that you have. And I think what you've said marries really well, because when you're happy in your country and you have, you know, you're sufficient in many ways, there's less need for you to be looking outwards, because why do people migrate really? It's because there's something lacking where they are. Either good or bad, you know, it could be like, oh, I want to become a doctor in whatever, and China is the only place where they practice that kind of medicine, whatever the case may be. That's positively so, and that's okay. But many times it's because of the lack that people experience where they are. That's why they decide to move, and and oftentimes it comes at a great cost. But let's think a bit more. Let's cast our nets. You know, we can think of anything in technology. Like, what kind of technology would you like Nigeria to be leading? Like,
Wow. I think, you know, Technology, that's such an interesting point. I think I want to see Nigerians, and we are in many respects, you know, but defining and forging and creating paths and creating new technologies that this world has not known
mm-hmm.
before. You know, you have you know, computer scientists like, I don't know, like Tim Berners-Lee, you know, he created the internet, and he's from Britain. I want Nigerians to do something of that scale, you know, where you're creating something, and at the time he didn't know what he was creating. In the same way, like Nigerians, and I'm sure there is somebody, one child in somewhere who I'm about to create one story now. They're in one village. They managed to go to one school. They got a scholarship. I mean, it doesn't always have to be that story.
Or but maybe they're even educated in Nigeria. They got the education in Nigeria.
Now that's a real story. Mm. I like that. You have Nigerian talent educated in Nigeria, creating technologies and tools that are going to shape the world in profound ways. You know, we can produce brilliant people. I mean, we are. That's not to say
we are brilliant people. Yeah.
Yeah, we are. So often, our brilliance is shaped abroad.
Yeah.
And exploited abroad. And so I think, I think that's something I definitely want in 2100.
I want a Nigerian to create a footwear that can make you travel at 20. It's because I've got my foot out and I'm like, because I'm basically like visualizing it where you just put on your trainers. Mm-hmm. And you just travel at 20 miles per hour. So it's cutting down on carbon emission. It's cutting down on traffic because you're all just kind of going mm-hmm. to your destination. You're cutting down, I don't know, you don't really need cars. Well, you're going to need cars, but, you know. So something, I'm trying to just think of the technology or something that, you know, hasn't been created yet. And I'm sure there's going to be many more things that will be created in the future. And even just like in the next 20, 50 years, there's so much more technology to come out of the world that is going to baffle us, that we're mm-hmm. going to be like, oh, we're too old for this.
Yeah.
We're going to be like our parents and just thinking, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think for me, education in Nigeria, we are the center of, you know, we have our own center of research and mm-hmm. development. Because mm-hmm. I used to work for a good 5 years. I worked in two separate institutions, one in the university that committed, one of the top universities in the world that committed so much to research and development. And every single time I'm researching, I'm drafting a contract or looking into a project, I'm thinking, you know, you see, like, I'm literally seeing how much money is going into this development, into this project.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years later, I'm seeing those products come out and being used in hospitals. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're seeing the impact of them in the society. I'm just like, why? You know, and in Nigeria, we don't really have the budget for research and development. It's just pitiful. You know, so that's just in university. Then there's a national institution that I also worked in, where, again, you know, they're doing all this development and science and engineering mm-hmm. and technology. And honestly, for the 5 years that I worked in both institutions, quite a lot of times, my mind just goes back to Nigeria. And I'm always like, why can't we invest in our research and development sector, you know, and be creating things and be generating these innovations and, you know,
because
mm-hmm. sometimes all they're developing is like, sometimes you're just developing like one small thing that goes into a larger thing, but then it makes the whole machine more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they're creating.
Yeah.
And they're exporting that to different parts of the world, in the aviation, in the engineering and all that stuff. So I think for me, when Nigeria becomes that center of education, like education is a center of excellence, mm-hmm. and we are really producing like visionaries and innovators and world leaders in these areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a Nigerian of my, a Nigeria that I really look forward to.
Yeah,
that I hope we can have.
I think there are. There is a push towards that, and you do, especially in the private sector, although, you know, I think an interesting thought exercise is, you know, even looking at the way Nigeria, like, even like governs itself and manages its own economy, because recently, and unfortunately, you know, cryptocurrency has been very popular among Nigerians, and that is an incredible piece of technology that is basically circumvents the traditional modes of conducting business and financial transactions between two parties. So instead of going through the banking system, you know, it's going through this ledger where people can basically, yeah, go outside of the banks. And that has been a lifesaver for many Nigerians, because they can't rely on traditional means, because the Nigerian government will, for some reason, you know, decide that they want to shut down cryptocurrency
trading,
that trading. But I think the reason why I bring that up is because, I mean, it fits into a larger trend globally around the prevalence and increased adoption of cryptocurrencies in financial systems. I read somewhere that Nigeria is the Nigerians engage in trading with cryptocurrencies is the second nation outside of the US to do that, which I think is really interesting, because in the US it's a very developed economy, a nation, and then you have, so the reasons for that, you have one set of reasons for that phenomenon,
for why they're doing that,
and then you have Nigeria, which is the poverty nation of the world, and they are engaging, they're the second nation.
It's quite a phenomenon, actually.
It's quite a stark difference,
contrast.
When you look at those two contexts. So I think it's really interesting to see how Nigerians figure out ways to work outside of the traditional means of governance.
That is a very good point you made, and I think, you know, it speaks to the ability of Nigerians to create opportunities for themselves and to tap into opportunities. And to be fast adopters of things, actually. So, you know, crypto, while some other countries are still trying to figure out, like, what is this crypto business all about? We are already the second largest country, you know, trading crypto. So I think, and, you know, it's almost like the same thing for any new opportunity. Out of Africa, Nigeria is probably always leading the way in terms of all this developments and ideas and taking advantage of things. But as you were speaking of currency, I was thinking, how cool would that be if Nigerian currency was like the currency of the future? Like how the pound and the dollar are like leading currencies in many ways. If, you know, Nigerian currency is really, you know, on a par with them. Once upon a time, It was on the par with it was
Once
even,
upon a Niger.
Once upon a time, once upon a Niger. Yeah, the Naira was a really strong currency, mm-hmm. even probably stronger than the pound actually in comparison. So yeah, it would be great again because at the moment £1 to Naira is like 778 Naira, and that is not good. That is not good at all. So yeah, a Nigerian currency that is strong, which is going to be a symptom of a strong economy, as well, isn't it? But we've talked about all these dreams, like, you know, we can dream, there's a lot that we can desire, but what's the roadmap? What do you think the roadmap, if we were being consulted to say, you know, this is the Nigeria that we want, we are going to be part of the focus group to draw up this roadmap, what are some of the things that you think would be easy wins, in a sense, like, you know, just things that you can even start to implement right now to get to that place, and perhaps some of the longer term strategy as well? And who are the people that would think, you know, can come together? So Nigerians in Nigeria, Nigerians in diaspora, honestly, yeah.
I would definitely say that Nigeria's future is obviously young. And when I say young, I mean the people that are leading Nigeria mm-hmm. are young people. It's a young nation in terms of its citizens. And even the political movements that are happening now, so many political movements around the world have been spearheaded by people, you know, young people in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
So I say that's the focus group.
Right.
And what else is needed? I think there has to be a commitment to a commitment and rejection of militarism. Even in civil society, because that has been our great downfall. So obviously a nation should be able to defend itself, but again, outside forces. So so a commitment to peace within our borders. And I think it does, it really does go back to thinking of things that have not been done before, you know. You need innovators, inventors. The future is designed by creative people. You know, one thing that I find really interesting, and I think we've spoken about it before off the podcast, is I was reading a passage from Things Fall Apart. The last paragraph of Things Fall Apart, there is a British official who has just seen the death of, not seen the death, but is witnessing the aftermath of the death of the main character. And he reduces, Chinua Achebe does something so incredible that he in the last paragraph shows what Britain has done to Nigerian history, in that he's reduced the entire story of Things Fall Apart and said that the story of this man would be a good paragraph in this book that I'm writing, right? And I find that that's such an intelligent way of highlighting what British people have done to Nigerian history. He because Chiang and Chebi is doing the very thing that the British have done. And yeah. I thought, oh, that's such an intelligent and creative way to hit home what has gone on. And the reason why I bring that up is because you have this great Nigerian writer who has like filled in and plugged in the gaps of what Nigeria or what the Igbo people looks like or could have looked like, you know, or could have been our story or was our story, was one of our stories
mm-hmm.
before British colonization.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that creative mind filling in the gaps, quote unquote, for us so that we have a sense of who we were before we were colonized.
Yeah.
And I think that can also be applied to the future mm-hmm. in that you have incredible writers who, you know, in speculative fiction,
mm-hmm.
who are writing up, or who are writing, creating worlds of what the future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pick and draw on their writings to get inspiration for what a future Nigeria is. And I think that's very exciting. So, you know, and we're talking about this, you know, I mean, well, you could look at like even more recent and worldwide like phenomena or popular content like Black Panther, Wakanda,
mm-hmm.
and that was a global kind of phenomenon. Everybody was like caught up in, you know, mm-hmm. the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it speaks to, I think it taps into something that we shouldn't like dismiss.
It's a kind of foretelling, isn't it? It's a kind of prophecy, and I think even in the Western world, a lot of prophecy were written in the fiction universe where mm. there was almost kind of like a projection of this is what we want, and so we're going to start writing what we want. So you're not really waiting for that moment before you get with the program. And I think that is a very interesting point, because I was listening to a talk show, a Nigerian talk show once, and they were talking about, you know, just the whole thing of writing and fiction and what our movies should be portraying.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's almost like, oh, that's not realistic. But we don't really want realistic. We want possibilities. We want ideologies. We want things to be portrayed. And I think it's really important that those kind of things are being, you know, like you said, as a creative, that we have those creative people who are projecting that image, that future, that story, for the younger generation coming to be like, actually, I remember once upon a time when I would watch like certain sci-fis, and it's like, oh, a plane is doing this and a car is doing that. And it's like, actually, no, it's not safe. It's not very far from reality that you have these, you know, cars and, you know, planes and all this other equipment doing different things. But people wrote, like, obviously, maybe not in silo because they had some sort of scientific knowledge and all that stuff, but there's still a projection of the future
mm-hmm.
of what they want. And even there are times when I think there's a drama on Netflix, I don't know it very well, but I think it was talking about, oh, what would you do in a world where if everything was to like go quiet, like everything almost like a lockdown type of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how many years later we're now in the lockdown? I'm not saying that they wrote it or they prophesied it, but sometimes some ideas you watch,
look at Contagion. That one is even like, have you seen that film, Contagion?
No, I haven't. No.
Anyway, Contagion, I'm sure there are listeners who have watched that film. Contagion is literally how lockdown happened.
So there are many things that have been, you know, I've read, I've watched, I'm like, oh, that kind of like sounds familiar or looks familiar to what's happening now. And it's almost like a kind of like a manipulation of people's behavior towards achieving a certain goal. Mm. So if you're saying, oh, we don't want corruption anymore in our country, perhaps we need to start having writers who are writing plays where corruption is not thriving. In the way it is now, where bad behavior is being punished mm-hmm. and, or, you know, being penalized, and where good behavior is being rewarded and positively reinforced, and mm-hmm. you know, there's good repercussion for those things, and slowly but surely you're building a new resilience, and you're mm-hmm. building a new story, a new ideology for Nigerians. So no, I totally hear you. I think the creatives should be part of this focus group for the mm-hmm. roadmap. Mm-hmm. And not just creatives in entertainment, but creatives in every aspect.
All sorts of industries.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, what you said, what you were describing sounds like a propaganda machine.
Okay.
And I know propaganda is always, is routinely seen as like a dirty word,
mm-hmm.
but every nation, every...
needs a propaganda.
Yeah, needs a propaganda machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so... yeah, Nigeria needs that, but you just have to decide. I guess it goes back to our last episode about who we are, what kind of thing are we trying to propagate.
Yeah, and that ideology, because you need the people to actually agree and say, okay, this is the ideology we're pushing forward and this is how we're going to achieve it. But yeah, so I think, and in terms of the people, how do, because obviously the thing is, having the people unite for a common cause is always... do you think everybody needs to be united with the vision? Or is it possible that people can work in their own pockets?
I think there has to be an overarching mission or vision that everybody is trying to achieve. But I think the things that we spoke about, like, all Nigerians want that. They want peace. They, you know, they want to be in their home. They want to be around their people and their family, and they want to be joyous. You know, I don't really know any Nigerian who has traveled abroad who said, I wanted to leave. You know, I mean, they, you know, Nigerians who have left Nigeria have left because it's pains them to do so, because things are so desperate. But deep down, the desires are like, why would I ever want to leave my people? Why would I want to leave my family? Why would I want to leave even something as basic as the quality of food?
The weather. Hey.
Like, why? Like, listen, no Nigerian is saying, oh, I'm coming to the UK because, you know,
the British weather.
The British weather is so fantastic. You know? No, so... I think those things that we spoke about before, everybody can get behind. I think we do need to recognize and accept that people are working in different areas and they have their own lane, and so sometimes it's easy to think that we all need to be working towards that vision in the same way. And we don't, and if anything, it's important that we diversify the way in which we reach that vision. So I think that's a key thing, because I think it can be really easy to forget that. Because, for example, when you look at the NSARS protests last year, you know, everybody was just about, it was a very simple message, like end SARS, end the police brutality against Nigerians, particularly Nigerian youth, right? But then eventually things started to get
to fizzle,
and like people, you know, then online people are having different conversations about different factions who are wanting to campaign for XYZ and things. People were getting angry, you know, over the division and thinking, no, we must all do it in one way. And people were forgetting that we're all trying to reach this common goal of ending this police brutality against us, but there are many ways to get there, like independence.
Many ways to skin a cat, but yeah. I don't know how many ways to skin a cat. No, but that's just, no, it's really true. And what you said just reminded me of, because I had a conversation, I curated a conversation last year around the NSARS, you know, protest. And I recall at the time, there was this kind of like call for, you know, we need a leader, somebody to be the forefront, to be at the forefront of this. And people were saying, no, we don't, We don't need a leader. It's quite clear what the ask is. We don't need a leader to... I mean, we might eventually have a leader, but for at this stage of the protest, it's clear to the government what we're asking for. So let them fulfill... let them talk to us and let them, you know, give us a plan for how they intend to achieve this and kind of stuff. But then also going back to what you said is the fact that there are many ways to serve a common cause. And, you know, last year, many people were not on ground at Lekki toll gates or all these other various locations where the protest was happening. But there were people support, like, I know of people like online who were like vendors selling food. They literally provided food for all the protesters on ground. They made sure there was food for them to stay there from morning till night, snacks. They made sure there were drinks. They made sure they were comfortable. They just make provisions in the ways that they can. And it really reminds me of, you know, that Bible saying where it talks about, you know, we've got different parts of the body. The different parts of the body, and the eyes cannot say, oh, I don't need you, or the hand cannot say, I don't need the finger or this and that. So just talk about, like, we're all part of one body, but we all have different functions to play. And it's really important that we're all able to acknowledge that, recognize that, and play to our own individual strengths. And that is really one of the efficient ways that we can achieve what we want to achieve going forward. Because yeah, it's easy to start to create false conflict where there really shouldn't be any conflicts, where it's like, actually no, you do your thing, I do my thing, we're all fighting for this common cause. And as long as there's no, what I'm doing is not making your it's not like disturbing your efforts, then let's fudge our heads, basically. So, yeah, I think, do you know, as we're talking about it, I'm really hopeful. I think it's... I think it'll be quite a dream. I think it'll be quite a dream to have it happen. And I think even in our lifetime, you know, because we've just said 100 years, but yeah, I'll probably have been using a walking stick in 50 years' time. But I think even just to be able to see it and, yeah, die peacefully. But I mean, I would die peacefully either way. But yeah, I think it'll be a great thing to see in our lifetime.
Yeah. And I think, like, even saying it, it gets me, like...
Emotional
and excited. And don't get me wrong, I know that, like, I'm saying this from a place where I'm in relative...
Comfort
and peace. So I'm not, like, you know, blind to that. But whenever I think, again, of the people who fought for independence, you know, our first stage of independence, you know, they were dreamers. They were dreamers, and so are we. And there's no reason why our dreams can't become a reality. I think there's definitely, you know, something to be said about what sacrifices are we willing to make to see our dreams become a reality, because I think probably that's really at the heart of the question, you know. What are we willing to sacrifice to see that dream become a reality? And I think that's a question we all have to answer, like, personally.
Well, we're sacrificing our Friday evenings to record this wonderful podcast and to educate. I think it's very valid what we're doing as well, because everybody has to play a part. And I think education cannot be undermined. Educating people about the history, because what they say about, if you don't know where you're coming from, you're not going to, where you're going is not guaranteed. And I think that's why for us, this podcast, this, what we do, is really important. it's a sacrifice for us to come to, you know, to research, to have all these topics and all that. And I'm not saying it's the greatest sacrifice, but we really enjoy it. But I think we remind ourselves just the core and the foundation of why we're doing what we're doing, which is really to educate Nigerians about the history, to get us involved and get us engaged, and really in a way to write the history that we want, so that, you know, in 50 years time, there's another Lara and Evelyn talking about the last 50 years and how they got to where they are, and, you know, projecting the next 50 years or so as well. So history is really important, and I think it's a shame that Nigeria doesn't really pay much attention to it, but hopefully we start to change the narrative slowly, and yeah, we can one day see the Nigeria that we truly desire.
And I also want to say that, you know, I'm out here wanting to encourage the people right now.
Yes, come on, preach it.
But like Nigerians are doing great stuff already. Nigerians are making history.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, they're not the Bellos, they're not the like, you know, they're not the great names that we all speak of, but the little things, the small things that Nigerians are doing is making history, is contributing to a better future. And it's we don't want to diminish anything
that, not
that people are doing, and like this podcast is in one small way, however many listeners there are, in one small way, this is going to get somebody to research something in more depth, and become more enlightened, and think about the future, and think about who I am as a Nigerian, and actually change the definition of that. And it's an empowering thing. Like, I think that if there's anything that I would want to say, is that just remember that the power is in the choice, you know?
The power is in the choice.
The power is in the choice. So choose who you want to be.
Wow, I should put that on a t-shirt.
Merch coming soon.
Hey, watch out. We're diversifying.
Oh, boy.
No, but it's been a good conversation. Yeah. I really enjoyed this.
So this is kind of rounding up some of the thoughts we have around Nigerian independence and our hopes for the future. But what we would really love to hear from our listeners are topics that you're interested in us discussing. We want to hear what your thoughts are on the podcast. We're really excited about the future for it, and we want you to join us in the journey.
Yeah, and the way you can do that is by sharing, liking, subscribing, and just, yeah, follow us on all our platforms, and yeah, encourage us. Until next time, guys.
Until next time, I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Lara.
Bye.
Cheers.